Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Back with us this week is Corinne Carey. She is the Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices. And in New York, the Medical Aid in Dying Act is awaiting New York Governor's signature or not. Corinne Carey, thank you so much for coming back and joining us on the Capital Connection.
Thanks for having me, David.
Well, the battle in your mind, I'm sure, to get this Medical Aid in Dying Act on the governor's desk has been quite an effort. Now, at least a decade, right, that you've been fighting for this. There's already a law in New Jersey. But why don't we begin by having you tell everyone exactly what the Medical Aid in Dying Act would allow?
Sure. The Medical Aid in Dying Act, as passed by both chambers of the New York State Legislature, would allow a terminally ill adult to ask their doctor for a prescription for medication that they can take at a time of their choosing or never, should their suffering become unbearable. This medication would allow them to die peacefully on their own terms, so long as they are found by two doctors to be terminally ill, that is, with an illness that is incurable and irreversible, with the mental capacity to make such a decision and the ability to self-ingest the medication. There are more than a dozen other strong safeguards attached to the bill, but those are the primary requirements for accessing the law.
And Corinne Carey, of course, a lot of your efforts over the years have been to alleviate the concerns from those that are against this when it comes to worry over doctor shopping, you know, a family doing in a relative. But you've tried to put these checks and balances in the law, right?
We have. You know, we, along with the sponsors of the bill, Assemblymember Amy Paulin and Senator Brad Hoyleman-Siegel, and before him, Senator Dianne Savino, met with dozens of groups across the state to hear their concerns, their misgivings, their confusion about the law. And the sponsors made numerous changes to the law during that 10-year campaign that strengthened it and actually made it what we consider the strongest, most protective law in the nation. So yes, there are various safeguards, but there are still misunderstandings. I am still answering questions from doctors who somehow believe that this law would require them. And the law could not be more clear. There are protections in more than one place in the law that provide immunity and protection for doctors who both practice under the letter of the law, fulfilling every obligation, but also those who decline to participate, decline to grant the patient's request for medical aid in dying for any reason. So this law is truly voluntary on everyone's part, the patient, the doctor, a hospice, a pharmacy, everyone.
Yeah, and it gets a bit tricky, right? Because doctors, you know, are supposed to do no harm. And some people believe that by letting people die, quote, before their actual time to avoid pain is not a good thing. And then you have the religious aspect of this, right? The Catholic Church and others who encourage their parishioners not to do something like this because, you know, taking your own life could be seen as a sin.
Two arguments there, both very different. And the first, I would say that there is an ever-increasing proportion of doctors who believe that the principle of doing no harm applies when someone is suffering with unrelenting pain and there is an option to relieve that pain and that person is deprived of that. So a doctor who fails to deliver the kind of care that can ease someone's passing is doing active harm. That's how many doctors understand that principle today. That's why we have the vast majority of doctors standing in support of this bill. The New York State Academy of Family Physicians is a strong supporter, and the Medical Society of the State of New York supports the bill. So I think that that argument is a bit outdated or maybe, you know, not understood in the same way. In terms of religion, parishes, priests, reverends, pastors can and should continue to minister to the people that follow them and teach whatever it is that is the tenet of someone's faith. But the law, New York state law, should allow everyone to die in a way that's consistent with their faith and their values and their beliefs. I'm a Catholic. My family has certain views on medical aid and dying, and I doubt that anyone in my family would ever use the law. But we strongly believe that everyone deserves to believe whatever they choose, and not everyone is going to believe the same thing that we Catholics do.
We're speaking with Corinne Carey, Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices. They are awaiting an answer from Governor Kathy Hochul as to whether she'll sign the Medical Aid in Dying Act. And here we are. You were in the Capitol on October 8th, rallying to that end, trying to urge the governor to do that. You had a doctor with you. Is it Dr. Bowl? Is that how I say it?
Dr. Jeremy Bowl, yes. He is both a doctor and someone living with a terminal illness right now.
So tell us about him and what he had to say.
But Dr. Jeremy Bowl has given his life and public service to New York State. He ran a home visit project in the Bronx and in other parts of New York City, and he most recently was a vice president at Mount Sinai Hospital until he was diagnosed with ALS and retired early from that position. And as he describes it, he fell into a deep despair, understanding full well as a doctor what ALS would do to his body. And it was one morning that he woke up and realized that he had the means and the wherewithal and the ability to pick up and move to a state that allows for medical aid in dying, a state like Vermont or New Jersey, for example. And he said that that realization turned things around for him and helped him to live with ALS as opposed to simply dying of ALS. And his story, I think, provides a really important insight into what this law will do for people. It gives those who have an illness that has taken so much control from them a measure of control over their own destiny back. And that means the world to someone who is facing the end of their lives. And we're currently working with 7 of those advocates who live from scan to scan, wondering when their disease, which is terminal and will result in death, will progress to the point that they would be eligible for medical aid in dying. But 201, all of them describe what an incredible peace of mind they would have if the governor signed this bill today. Many of them said that they had the best night's sleep after the Senate passed the bill because that was such a huge milestone for us. When that vote happened and, you know, it became clear that the legislature was prepared to send the bill to the governor, people felt heartened that they would have some control over the end of their lives.
Now, obviously, you want the governor to sign this bill, and she's been keeping her answer to this very close to the vest, saying only basically that her decision will be the right decision for New Yorkers. You know, we have majority Democrats in both houses of the legislature, as well as the executive branch with the governor. So what's your thinking right now on what the governor is thinking and whether or not you believe she'll sign the bill?
Well, David, every single day I get at least a dozen phone calls, many more emails asking me why hasn't the governor acted yet after these 10 long years of making improvements to this bill? And, you know, I'm of two minds here. One, it's not entirely out of the ordinary for the governor to be taking this long, particularly on a consequential bill. I know that many of my colleagues who do legislative advocacy are waiting for the governor to sign other important pieces of legislation. I know that over 900 bills, I think it was anywhere between 850 and 900 bills were passed by the legislature and await her signature. So it's not entirely out of the ordinary. On the other hand, time moves very differently for someone who has a limited amount of time left. And so for a terminally ill person to know that it could be 2 more months or 2.5 more months before the governor acts is excruciatingly painful for them to imagine having to deal with these illnesses. Sometimes these scans come 2 months apart. We could have, you know, the 7 who came to Albany last week take a nosedive 2 months from now and not know whether this is going to be an option for them. These are human lives. These are not poll numbers. These are not facts or figures. These are people that are looking to the governor to make, as she says, the right decision. And the right decision for New York is to sign this bill and allow everyone to have the kind of death that is fitting for the kind of lives that we've led.
Well, one of the common examples that's been used, I've even brought it up with you in the past, Corinne Carey, is the idea that when it comes to our pets, the animals that we love, when they're in a situation like this and they're going to have a painful end of life, we immediately seek to, quote, put them down. Now, that language probably doesn't sound good when you talk about human beings, but either way, these are sentient beings and they're in pain. And we would do it for, you know, the pet and see nothing wrong with that.
Well, I'd say a few things about that. You're right, but it doesn't sound quite good. And I remember that we had a supporter who felt very strongly about this and had a sign in the hallway at the Capitol during the time that the legislature was deliberating this bill. And there were a number of lawmakers who took great offense to this notion because they believe, not everyone does, they believe that animals don't have souls. They believe that animals are very different from people and that people shouldn't be treated as animals. But I think about something that one of the veterinarians that is among our supporter base said to me once, and he took it a step further and said, not only do we not allow our pets to suffer when they are in pain at the end of their lives, we would be charged with animal cruelty if we allowed a pet to starve to death the way that we allow families to do so. And so I understand that this is a difficult argument for some people. Many, many, many of our supporters and many people in rural New York who are farmers, who deal with livestock and agriculture, they understand this deeply. That's why our support numbers are so strong in rural areas in New York State. You know, the fact is, we're not making this decision for other people like we do our pets. All we're doing is putting the power to determine what your end-of-life experience looks like in the hands of the dying person, where it belongs. No family member, no doctor, no hospice can make the decision that someone uses medical aid in dying. Only the dying person can do that.
She is Corinne Carey, the Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices. We're talking about the Medical Aid in Dying Act, which right now sits before the governor, who has to make a decision soon enough as to whether she's going to sign or not sign this bill. I just want to add, this is my opinion, Corinne, but those people that say animals don't have soul, we're animals. Human beings are also part of the animal kingdom. So, you know, sentient beings are sentient beings, in my opinion. And when it comes to making arguments with human beings, at least there's a chance to change some minds. And I know that that has happened over the years because we've talked about it. Can you share at least one example where someone started on the no side and eventually said, you know what, I think I need to support this?
Oh, absolutely. We have many, many stories of this. I'll tell two very quick ones. We held a film screening in one of the assembly members' districts. And after the film was completed, the film is How to Die in Oregon. But after that film was over, a woman stood up and described that her mother had used the California law and how peaceful that experience was for her and for the entire family. And then a woman stood up right after she did and said, my husband had the same disease as your mother, and he tried to take his own life and ended up on life support. And it was an absolute torture for him and for the family. And shortly thereafter, that assembly member changed her mind and became a supporter of medical aid in dying, hearing those two stories juxtaposed. The other amazing example is Reverend Al Taylor, who, when he took office, we met with him, and he made it very clear to us that as the only practicing clergy member in the legislature, that he could never support this bill. But we kept up a dialogue with him. It was joking at times. He would look at us and put up his hand and say, not today, you know, and then, you know, say, you know, I'm not with you, but have a nice day anyway. And we kept up that cordial relationship until one day at the Capitol, we had mothers for a Mother's Day event, mothers who had lost adult children and children who had lost their mothers to painful deaths. And they were speaking at an event. And after the event, they met with Reverend Taylor. And as they sat there sharing their stories, Reverend Taylor began to tear up. And he shared that he had lost his father just months before and watched his father suffer in agony at the end of his life. And at the end of that meeting, Reverend Al Taylor became one of the biggest champions for this bill and walked hand in hand with those mothers to put his name on the bill and then stand up in strong support in every corner that he could, writing opinion pieces, letters to his colleagues. He's just been an incredible illustration of how this bill is not a priority for anyone until it is, until you've seen it, until you're facing down your own death, or until, you know, you've received a terminal diagnosis and think to yourself, how would I like the end of my life to look?
Yeah, my cousin's wife, who's now passed, she passed away at 29 and had a rare form of breast cancer. It took her fairly quickly, but, you know, she was in hospice for a while and even came home a couple of times and then went back. What about these other palliative measures to end life? I mean, I guess you would argue people are still ending up in pain.
Yeah, I think that's something that folks who have experience with hospice perhaps know. Hospice provides immeasurable comfort to people. My own father received hospice services. I wish he had been referred to hospice sooner so that he had the full benefit of those incredible services. But there are times for some people in some circumstances that even the best hospice and palliative care cannot alleviate pain and suffering. And it is for those people that we need another option. I mean, everyone is different. Everyone's illness is different. Everyone's body is different. And, you know, there are a comprehensive set of end-of-life care policies that every state should have. They should include robust education about the benefits of hospice and palliative care, which we often don't see happening. They should include access to good hospice and palliative care, but they should also include another option that puts this control in the dying person's hands should all else fail and suffering persist.
Corinne Carey, you know, it's interesting to me that polls show that New Yorkers support the measure and has backing, even among Republicans. And politicians are very aware of what the polls show. So if most people support it, that's another question mark in my mind as to why a governor might not support it or sign it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I go back to what she said. She said that she will make the right decision, and I do take her at her word. I think she will make the right decision. I think she will sign this bill. But many people have been speculating about how she's making the decision. Well, she's a Catholic, so she'll definitely veto the bill. Well, she is, you know, running for re-election, and Representative Elise Stefanik has come out strongly against the bill, so she won't sign it because she doesn't want to give Elise Stefanik another point to hammer her on. Or, well, you know, the opposition brings up a number of concerns, and so she won't sign it for that reason. I don't think there's a wrong way to make this decision. You can look at the facts and the fact that there have been no cases of abuse or coercion in the states that have these very carefully constructed laws. You can look at the polling. Poll after poll after poll shows that New Yorkers support this by a margin of 2-1. You can even look at your own Catholicism and say the majority of Catholics support this bill. And as a Catholic governor, I know that I have to govern for all New Yorkers, not just Catholic ones. So I think any way you slice it, no matter how you try to make this decision, you can make the right one.
Well, and a lot of times decisions are made based on pressure put on lawmakers. So I'm guessing you would urge people to contact the governor's office, contact the sponsors of the bill, let lawmakers know how you feel.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of our opponents recently said that if you polled 100 New Yorkers, this wouldn't be on their top 10 list of things that they want the governor to do. And they may well be right about that. But that's an argument in favor of signing the bill as well. If people are indifferent about this, and the only people who care about it are people who've watched loved ones suffer, people who have faced their own mortality and understand what they want at the end of their lives, then that's why she should sign it. If people truly are indifferent, but there's a strong majority of people who've seen suffering and don't want that to happen to them or their families, then that's an argument for signing the bill.
You are listening to The Capital Connection. I'm David Giustina. With us is Corinne Carey, Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices for New York and New Jersey. New York, of course, as we've been saying throughout the show, has the Medical Aid in Dying Act ready to be signed or not by Governor Hochul. Now, you know, it dawns on me, Corinne, that the other place where it would probably have more impact would be on the federal level. Should there be a federal law on this issue? And do you think it would pass the Congress?
At this point in time, I think we're seeing that they're having a hard time passing just about anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so I wouldn't bank on anything that the federal government does. I would say that criminal law is controlled by the states. And, you know, just as with so many other areas of public health law, that is a power delegated to the states. And so that's where we need to see action.
You know, many of us, and I know you remember Jack Kevorkian, but did he give a bad name to this movement? Did it hurt or help?
You know, I think he was a very polarizing figure. The way that he practiced medicine at the end of life was very different from what medical aid in dying is today. And so when people hear the term medical aid in dying, some people of a certain generation, you and I included, think about Jack Kevorkian. But for younger people, that name doesn't even come up. They think of Brittany Menard,
yeah,
the young woman, again, 29 years old, who lived in California. She had a fairy tale wedding spread where she and her husband Dan Diaz got married in a vineyard in California. Beautiful long white dress. Several weeks after they got married, she was diagnosed with a glioblastoma, which many of your listeners know. John McCain had a glioblastoma, is universally fatal. So she bravely asked her doctor what the end of her life would look like, and when he described some of what she might expect, she said, "That's not for me. I would like medical aid in dying." And he said, "Not available in California, but you can go to Oregon." And so she traveled to Oregon with Dan and used the last months of her life not only to check off things on her own bucket list and live her life to the fullest, but also advocate for this law. And the following year after her death, using medical aid in dying in Oregon, California passed the law in 2015. So Brittany's legacy still impacts lawmakers today. Dan has been to New York to meet with lawmakers. Her picture has graced the cover of People magazine. And People magazine recently did another story about a California woman who used medical aid in dying. Actually, I don't know that she was from California. I think she might have been from another one of the 11 states that now allows for this option. But that story of Brittany Menard really captured the attention of the country. And so when you talk to younger people, that's who they remember, not Jack Kevorkian, who, again, did this very differently from what these laws allow.
Well, Corinne Carey, very quickly, because we're running out of time, but I know this has got to stick in your craw because we see different ways that this is described. Your title is Medical Aid in Dying Act, but I can't tell you how many times I see in print or hear over the radio or TV assisted suicide, and those mean different things.
They really do. And the way that I used to explain it to lawmakers is, look, medical aid in dying is the technical term. It's the title of the bill. Death with dignity is an advocacy term. I tend not to use death with dignity because my father, who, again, as I said earlier in the interview, is Catholic, when he died suffering. And for our family, it was mercifully not a long period of suffering, but he believed and understood in the concept of redemptive suffering. My dad died with dignity. He died with dignity because he died the way that he wanted to, at home, surrounded by his loved ones. I would not change that for him. So I don't use the term death with dignity because I don't believe that medical aid in dying, that you need to use medical aid in dying in order to die with dignity. But assisted suicide is just a polarizing term that sensationalizes the issue. And from my experience, David, people who want medical aid in dying, the 28 people that we've lost during this campaign, the 7 that we're working with now who've raised their voices in support, they are the most full of life people I have ever met. They have done everything to stay alive. Iris Dudman, who came to the Capitol last week with basically a headpiece of electrodes on her scalp. She's got a glioblastoma in her brain, and this contraption on her head helps her stave off a growth of that tumor. These are full of life people. They want to live. To be described as suicidal is hurtful, and it's absolutely offensive to the families of people who've used medical aid in dying and passed away peacefully in other states.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Our guest is Ben Corinne Carey, Senior Campaign Director for Compassion and Choices. You can expect a decision fairly soon from New York Governor Kathy Hochul on this bill. Corinne, thanks for joining us on the Capitol Connection.
And thank you so much for having me.
Support for the Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.